On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. You know what sucketh? It sucketh when you begin, when you're ready to begin your program, and your computer looks at you and says, nah, I'm not up to it. The last 10 minutes have been spent in a, and bear in mind, there's a little systems check that I go through, a little checklist, yada, yada, yada. About 2 minutes before showtime, that's a complicated radio noise. So, yeah, the last 10 minutes have been spent in a reboot. My apologies for those of you. Well, I can't apologize to you because you've probably gone off in disgust now. We're here, we're here, we're here. Let the bells ring out, the banners fly. It's too good to be true, but we're here. I desperately wanted to get a show in this evening so that we would have 5 in a week. Kind of like it when that pops up in the archives. Gives folks a sense of confidence. Me, not the least among whom. Oh, that was tormented grammar and syntax, wasn't it? I'm Bob Kincaid. It's Friday. I'm frustrated. It's also the front porch. This is the horn. This is the Head On Radio Network. America's liberal voice. And generally, we spend these days on something we like to call Friday on the front porch. A sort of general recap of the week, a catch-up, compendium, that sort of thing. I want to thank all of you for the emails pointing out how much you enjoyed last night's show. I did too. Wow, I really, really did. Because it had an energy about it that was just. Well, just plain old-fashioned refreshing. Now, I've got a restart on this computer, and I don't know if it's going to cooperate or not. Poor old thing's just down there grinding away. So we may or may not have stories with which to deal. I may have to just make it all up. Sadly, there was no smoothie intervention today to tell you about it. It's been a very, very lovely... Just gently rained a little bit ago. Banal kind of day. But I will repeat the program note. To wit, next week is a road week, and we will be broadcasting live from Capitol Hill. In conjunction with the oral arguments being presented to the Supreme Court of the United States regarding the Affordable Care Act. That's Monday and Tuesday. Sunday is a travel day. Wednesday and Thursday, I think my colleague Bo Webb and I will be doing a little work with the Appalachian Community Health Emergency Campaign in D.C. That is yet to be determined. If we don't, coming home on Wednesday. If we do, coming home on Thursday, maybe coming home on Friday. So, I'll be back in the studio either Thursday or Friday of next week. That's where that situation stands. Come on, Gertrude. You can do it. I have, and this is my fault, I have resisted the time involved to take this production computer down and wipe it and reload it. For a very long time, And I think she's just given me some signals that she needs that TLC that all machines need periodically. Just going to have to happen. You know, because I live a life of indolent boredom. This thing will stop grinding in a few minutes and maybe we can actually get somewhere, get something done. I was, we're making progress. Here we go. Bear with me, please. That's a good computer. Bailed on that one, I'll never know, but yeah, who knows the ways. Now, it is a more than frustrating day here in the hills and hollers of West by God, Virginia. I am profoundly frustrated this evening because a court in Washington, D.C., where the sitting judge is not a Reagan appointee, not a Happy Bush appointee, not a Clinton appointee, not even a W appointee, but an appointee of President Obama, today ruled against the Environmental Protection Agency in the matter of something that is very important to folks here in Central Appalachia. The Environmental Protection Agency had actually taken the profound step of vetoing a toxic waste dump that was known as the Spruce Mine. 9,000 acres of devastation, destruction, poison, and death. And today, this Obama appointee said, "Nah, why don't y'all just go ahead and blow them hillbillies straight to hell?" No, she didn't say that. She said that the Environmental Protection Agency lacked the authority to veto that permit when the permit had already largely been granted. The decision itself is couched in all the fine and technical language that court decisions are couched in. But the summary effect is, why don't y'all go ahead and blow them hillbillies straight to hell? Of course, this judge does not live in Appalachia. She lives in some very comfortable place in or around Washington, D.C., and she never feels the blasts, and she never wipes her windows free of toxic grime. Boulders never come rolling into her yard. She never has to hear stories about 2-year-old boys being crushed to death by a flying boulder off a mountaintop removal operation. She doesn't have her foundation cracked or her water poisoned. She merely considers the pleadings before her. She was confirmed by the Senate 97-0. And it is pretty sickening to contemplate. Our good friend Jeff Biggers just wrote over at Huffington Post. He said, in an alarming rebuke to fledgling EPA efforts to regulate devastating mountaintop removal mining operations today, U.S. District Judge Amy Berman Jackson ruled that the Obama administration overstepped its authority in revoking a permit last year for the largest proposed strip mining operation in central Appalachia. This was going to be a historically huge toxic operation. Despite growing health and human rights crises, the troubling judicial move comes on the heels of the coal mining industry's spring ritual of EPA bashing, including a recent pillory of EPA administration chief Lisa Jackson by big coal booster U.S. Representative Hal Rogers, and we discussed that on this program, and the insidiously untrue mantra that mountaintop removal permits have slowed to a trickle. Far from a trickle, according to the EPA, 110 individual and general mining permits have been issued by the Corps of Engineers since the Obama administration began under Section 404 of the Clean Water Act. In a follow-up email, EPA spokesperson Bethsaida Alcantara noted all of the permits are for surface coal mining activities impacting streams, wetlands, and other water bodies. The activities include valley fills, roads, coal waste impoundments, and other discharges associated with surface coal mining. Less than 2 months ago, watchdog group Earth Justice released an action alert, in fact, on over 100 pending mountaintop removal permits now in play. Jeff then goes on to mention the work I'm presently involved in. Last month, besieged and frustrated Appalachian residents launched a new health care campaign, the Appalachian Community Health Emergency in Washington, D.C., calling on the Obama administration and the U.S. Congress to enact an immediate moratorium on reckless mountaintop removal operations and hold long-awaited hearings on the mounting death toll and humanitarian crisis. Coal River Mountain Watch, among other organizations, just issued a joint press release on this hideous decision by Judge Amy Berman Jackson. It is a sad day, not only for the people who live near mountains and streams threatened by mountaintop removal coal mining, but for all Americans who understand the need to protect our waterways and the health communities that depend on them. We are deeply disappointed and concerned about the effect of today's court ruling, because mountaintop removal mining has already caused widespread and extreme destruction to the mountains, waters, and communities of Appalachia. The Spruce No. 1 mine permit, in particular, was one of the largest mountaintop removal permits ever proposed in Appalachia, and it is located in an area of West Virginia that has already been devastated by several large mountaintop removal mines. We urge the EPA to appeal today's ruling. They must. They simply must. And continue to exercise its full authority under the Clean Water Act to protect waterways and communities. The Army Corps of Engineers should also exercise its authority to recognize the clear science and revoke or suspend the permit. Severe harm would occur if the company is allowed to dump mining waste. Our groups are committed to fighting for clean water and justice in Appalachia until the people in Appalachia get the protections we so deserve. The article is at Huffington Post under the tab of the green segment of the website, Spruce Mine Reversal. Just search Spruce Mine Reversal for Jeff Biggers. And do me a favor, please. I don't often ask you to do this kind of thing, but do me a favor, please. Spread this around. If nothing else, we would like not to be blasted to perdition while the world watches elsewhere and the hillbillies get blasted in ignominy. Did you do that? It would be awfully nice. And a hillbilly thanks you. Lord, I hope this thing gets appealed. Some emails to catch up with from yesterday and into today. I want to make sure I hit them all. Our good buddy Michael over in Columbus cited his first Friends of Coal sticker on a BMW. No joke. Michael notes, right up on the paint, too, left of the BMW logo. Who puts a bumper sticker on a BMW like that? A Fokker. They're not known for their big brains. Lots of lizard brains there. You know, it is Friday on the front porch. And this is not something I do very often, but we haven't heard from her in a great deal of time. And our pal Kate on the front range is punctual in the extreme. So I have a sneaking suspicion that I have Kate on the line here, and we're just going to go straight to the phones for a conversation that she has been wanting to have. And I think it is an appropriate conversation, especially with the lead-in of our own little corner of the apocalypse being okayed by a distant, uncaring federal judge. Let's go to the phones and see if we've got Kate here. Is that you?
Thanks for taking my call.
I wait all night for calls like these.
This was a nice segue. We couldn't have made this up, huh?
No, anyway, I couldn't. Well, I could neither have scripted this nor would I have wanted to.
Well, my burning question is, I mean, Verizon starts dumping me in about 20 minutes, and so I'm just going to jump right in before I get disconnected. My question is, how close are we to the collapse of the American empire? Because all of the research, all the things I listen to, all of the reading I've done, everything that's going on in our government and our imperialistic footprint all over the globe and our destruction of natural resources and the abuse of our citizenry and the fragility of our society all leads to what happened in Rome and in China and in the British Empire, and it's all just...
It all begins to just sort of look very much the same, doesn't it?
Yes, and then the big flap about how the economy, how the mess in Greece is going to bring down the global economy because of what the banks did. And I just chuckled this morning. I thought, well, hey, that's cool. Greece will bring us down. That's, you know, what goes around comes around. And time is so finite. I mean, we're just a little speck, and there is no such thing as time. That's the construct of some bright minds that, you know, they need to be in control. And so, you know what I mean? So if you would please compare and contrast what's going on compared to, like, the fall. Every empire has to fall, and then another one takes over. And so is China next? Because they were at one time, and then they stepped in after who? Whatever. You know what I mean?
I have been going hammer and tongs about a particular book of late, Kate.
Right, and I'm going to look it up.
You denizen of the library, you. I know you will, and once you do, you're just going to sit. You're going to sit there reading it, one hand holding the book and the other hand holding your head.
Fourteen ninety-three.
You need to read. I mean, reading 1491 is good to get an idea of what was lost, but 1493 is a stunning. It's a greatest hits album of everything white Europe has screwed up on this planet.
Right.
I mean, it's astonishing. I've mentioned the silver trade. I've mentioned the Anopheles mosquito and malaria and yellow fever.
Right.
I'm reading tobacco.
Right now I'm reading Jared Diamond's Guns, Germs, and Steel. Guns, Germs, and Steel. And I'm just shaking my head, going, yeah, hello.
And see, Charles C. Mann cites back both to Jared Diamond and to Michael Pollan. This guy is considering a wide range of reality, both past and present, and sadly, sorrowly, future.
Yeah.
So I'm presently in the book in China.
yeah.
And, you know, one of the questions you asked is China next?
Mm-hmm.
I don't think China can be next.
Well, their leadership, something was going on in Beijing, and I haven't been able to...
Well, Jude sent me a link along to it, because anything coming out of China... it's, you know, the information superhighway rolls down to about a dirt road there.
Right.
And nobody out there, there really hasn't been a lot of follow-up, but yeah, there was strangeness going on. There was a sacking of a high-ranking political official. We know that.
Mm-hmm.
From what, Chongqing or that
know.
Region?
And I heard a woman on, I listened only to CBC, and they have wonderful global coverage, and then I listened to World Radio Network, you know, and I've been hearing little bitty remarks that I can't tie it to anything, and Malloy mentioned something the other night, and then I started paying closer attention and listening well into the middle of the night to get like Australia Live or New Zealand Live or Korea or, you know, and I can't figure out what's going on, but I think China maybe is getting too big, like my sisters used to say, biggity in the britches. I don't know if they can sustain the rapid growth that they're going through. And
Kate, if you read 1493 and get us, and I'm only about a third of the way into the book. I think just given the time that I have to devote to read it, I'll be talking about this book for a while. I'm going to wind up trying to, you know, ask really nicely, go with my hat in my hand, and see if we can get Mr. Mann on the program. But if you see the ecological and economic upheavals that China has been through, and you see where they are now, their ecology. I mean, every now and then we'll get a news story like on when Brad and Desi do the Green News Report. Maybe they'll mention the fact that China leads the world in attempting to install wind turbines and solar panels, for instance.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because they've got a couple of billion people that they need to provide power to, and they know that even if they know more than the end. Look, okay, back up. Who knows better the nature of an addiction, the addict or the pusher? The addict.
Oh, yeah. I was going to say, why is that a question?
Right. Right. Yeah. So, and they are, China is at present trying to use up every last bit of coal they can get their hands on. You know, there are entire Appalachian mountains that have gotten on boats and gone to China. Now we've got a couple of them getting on a boat and going to India, so there's that competition too.
We have mile-long trains that go through Helena that are on their way to the coast to go to China.
Yeah.
Coming out of Wyoming and Montana.
And Cindy in Washington State has written me a couple of times of late to let me know that they're mobilizing there to try to stop the coal terminal that the coal industry plans for them, so that they too can be toxified, because there's nowhere on this continent that coal does not want to poison people, you know, for a profit. There's good money in poisoning people.
If I could just interject one thing, I've heard just in passing, and I couldn't figure out who was talking because I listened to so many programs on CBC out of Toronto and Ottawa and BC and Alberta and Edmonton. Somebody said, and the question is, why do we have to ship the oil to Houston to be refined? I mean, why can't they just dig up the tar sands and refine it there and then ship it to U.S. so we can get... No. Anyway, I heard somebody, they were in this discussion, and said that the reason they can't refine it in Canada is because China has some kind of a contract with Canada that they can't refine in Canada. It has to come to... I don't know. There's no way to ship it, or they can't refine it, or something. So we have to take the oil across the country, the slurry across the country to the refineries in Oklahoma and Texas to send it to China. And so China owns all the big part of that, and they also own a great deal of the energy that is being produced by wind power here.
Well, it's I don't know that sounds more reasonable than anything that I have read. In addition to the fact that the infrastructure is all in, it's all there. You know, why reinvent the wheel?
Right.
You've got the super tanker ports, and you've got the you've got the refineries.
Well, all of this, I guess this is just break it back down to where I started. I just take a big broad brushstroke sweeping view of what's going on around the planet, where we've come from, where we might be going, and I just see things like the elections and the tar sands and just the civilization crashing in, the broken and rotten in the middle. None of this really matters because we're just crashing. We're losing our power all over the globe, and we just keep hanging on and treading water like that little chipmunk guy that says, I've trained these chipmunks to do the water wheel so I can run my computer all
day. The funny part is it took 6 months to teach him to say stroke.
Funny little pudgy little guy. We just keep paddling and none of this is, it's not, what, for what? I just have this.
Right, and you know, the beauty of that commercial is the idea that, you know, he's generating energy from hamsters rowing a boat in a stationary boat in an aquarium, which is amazing, but he poured all of his energies into teaching the third little hamster to say stroke. And I think there's a lot of truth in that for us and for the global hydrocarbon society. We're spending all our efforts teaching a hamster to say stroke, Kate.
Right.
With our focus on these toxins, instead of you know, focusing on the miraculous fact that we've got this glowing furnace in the sky that can provide all the power the planet has ever needed, and we're not necessarily. That should be the focus of all. There should not be a single, not one more, Kate, not one more individual should be graduated from a university in the United States or Canada or anywhere in the first world, if you will. There should not be one single more petroleum or coal mining engineer graduated. They are, It's like graduating buggy whip engineers in the age of the steam locomotive.
And I keep when people are moaning because they don't have work, and I understand that, but if they went to work, they'd be producing goods and services that they couldn't afford to buy.
Well, if
that served them.
Well, what's the difference, Kate, between having no work and having a work having a job where you have to cringe when you tell them that you're out of the strawberry banana goo?
I know. I was gonna ask. Could I have mine with strawberry, please?
No, they ain't sent us none, and there wasn't none on the truck. Ain't none in the back.
Uh oh, fuel. They couldn't afford the fuel for the truck. When we do work, I mean. The people who control the money are like the lords and the kings and we who work for them produce whatever they need, and we give them the money and they give us the crumbs off of the table, and that's across the globe. I mean, very few people produce things that they can afford to buy.
Yeah,
goods or services.
I do these weird little things to just try to make little tiny differences in my own life. You may recall a couple of years ago I mentioned that I had followed up on a lifelong curiosity and begun shaving with a straight razor.
Yeah.
Well, I did that because, in part, I was fascinated with it, but also because I sat down one day. You know, I had just paid $25 for 4 razor cartridges.
Right.
And those things are thin, thin, razor-sharp pieces of metal that are encased in hydrocarbon-based plastic cartridges.
That's right. Made in China.
That I have to pay $25 for 4 of.
Yeah. Right.
And that upon being done, I simply throw them away and send them to the landfill.
Right.
And I got to a point, I couldn't tolerate it. You know, I'll take a couple of nicks and errors here and there, and I like the luxury of a steaming hot brush made of a renewable resource, renewable to everybody but the badger involved, of course, and making my own suds and doing and the stropping, and it's all very zen, and it's all about washing one's rice bowls, okay?
Right.
And I did that because I have these little moments where I can't tolerate crap anymore, and I've gotten the same way about writing instruments. I've always loved a nice fountain pen. I suspect you might be the same way.
I am, yeah.
And
but
so
I can't afford them.
But you talked to, well, yay, well, they're out there. They're out there.
Secondhand store, pawn shop, yeah.
Or even, you know, Amazon, eBay, you know, free shipping and $5.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, a package of crappy ballpoints will cost you $5.
Mm-hmm.
So I went with that, and there's an American company, and they're kind of nastily right-wing, but they're at least an American company, and they really put an effort into their product. So now I have another Zen ritual of, you know, wash rice bowls, strop razor, fill ink pen.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't make a damn bit of difference in the grand scheme of things that one person does that. But if a lot of people do that...
Does Scripps still have the little bottle with the whale on the side of it that you...
I don't know if Scripps does or not. This stuff is called Noodlers.
Okay.
And it's really, really good.
Rubber bladders or...
It's a piston-filled pen. You just stick the pen in and you twist the little hickey, and then you got a pen full of ink and you go write.
Yep. And I'm getting so old, you can't hardly read my illegible writing, but that sure would feel good. I love the smell.
You get the point. But you know, those are just little bitty things that I guess I can feel better about that may not make that much of a difference, but there you are. But the, you know, the larger answer to the question is that I don't think there is going to be a greater imperial dominance. I think that what you're going to see is you may see a few people, you may see a couple of countries try to rise to some degree of hegemony, but as quickly as they rise, they will collapse. I've been in correspondence with a gentleman by the name of Orlando de Guzman, who has just finished an absolutely fascinating segment on Al Jazeera. The name of the show is 101 East.
Mm-hmm.
And the name of the piece is India's Coal Rush. You know, everybody's so focused on China, 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 China.
Oh, no. Yeah.
You know, the world's largest democracy is out there poisoning people, too.
It is, yeah.
And they're doing it with the connivance of some of the same people who poisoned Appalachia, who are poisoning the Powder River Basin, who poisoned southern Illinois, where Jeff Biggers is, who poisoned, everywhere they go is poisoned. Yeah,
right.
Columbia. We are in a mad race to get every last bit of hydrocarbon out of the ground, and it's the race of the locusts, if you know what I mean.
Yes, I do.
Locusts land on a crop and they just eat it till it's all gone. Hence we have the parable of the locust and the ant.
Right. I've seen grasshoppers come into our field and eat it up and then leave. Yeah. I mean, same thing.
And that's what coal companies and oil companies are. And natural gas companies.
Mm-hmm.
What we have right now, if I would dare prognosticate, is a race. We have a race between
the
same...
Bottom.
Well, no.
The bottom.
They're racing to the bottom. There are people out there who are trying to race into the future. There are people out there who want that hopeful Star Trek future. I was having a conversation with Ferg, who, being 16, is having those sort of angsty teenage considerations, which I don't dismiss at all.
Right.
Because in the world he lives in, I think it's appropriate. And he says, you know, and what I've tried to point out to him is, you know, how long were the dinosaurs on the earth? How many millions of years? Humans have been here for less than 100,000 in their present form. I mean, if you count Lucy and everything, that's 2 million. But, you know, me and Lucy, we wouldn't have anything to talk about.
Mm-mm.
You know, humans that we could have some sort of relevant, perhaps, interaction with, less than 100,000 years.
With Freud's angst.
Well, that we just destroy everything, and it's all going to end in a mess anyway. It's a sort of I don't know what the word for it is right now, but it ain't optimistic.
No.
And so, you know, I was trying to get across to him that as human beings, Kate, we're babies. And babies go and break things. And babies make messes. Humanity is in its infancy. The question for humanity is whether or not we can keep from finally licking our finger real good and sticking it in the one light socket that we really, really, you know, Mother Nature, you know, Mama Nature said, don't do that. And I think that is what you are pointing at. Can we keep our finger out of that light socket long enough to grow up?
Oh, maybe you all can, but I'm getting old and I don't think so. And I'm just kind of, but just sitting here going, okay. I mean, just watching it go by and feeling like it's like some days I just feel this hopelessness and despair and think, oh, screw it. I'm just going to read another book, you know, or play another game of solitaire or something, you know, just sit here and watch it go by because I just feel like people won't. I have a friend who bought a new car a little bit ago, and now she's looking to buy a house. And I said, oh, no, that wouldn't be. Oh, well, people don't understand that the economy is collapsing and housing is, and we live in Montana. We've got fresh water. Hello. I mean.
Not for long, you don't.
I can't even drink the Helena water because it's so chlorinated that it keeps the porcelain shiny, you know. I mean, I can't even hardly take a shower in it because I know I'm just absorbing all that chlorine. And
you can fill your sink with it, put your whites in, and they come out almost ultraviolet.
Soak the laundry in it, that's right. Scrub the toilet with it. It just, we're pretty isolated and, jingoistic and,
this goes back to the conversation with Dr. John last night, I think, too, Kate, and that is the question of where do we focus our healthy fears? You know, not running around in a lightning storm with a golf club in the air. That's intelligent. That's not irrationally fearful. That's born of years of hard-learned lessons. On the other hand, being terrified that a couple of girls might hold hands at a prom, you know, the planet will go ahead and explode whether that happens or not. Although if Mahmoud Ahmadinejad is to be believed, it will happen more quickly, you know, via volcanoes, earthquakes, what have you, if those two girls are holding hands. But yeah.
They don't want us going on prom dates together because that just proves one more time that we don't need them for nothing.
See?
And we've been aborting unwanted growths in our uterus for a long, long, long time.
Did you happen to catch the delightful story that a number of women have taken to crocheting uteri and sending them to government officials?
No, that's funny.
It's delightful because they are knitting or crocheting. Maybe some of them are macrame uteri, and they're sending them to right-wing government officials along with the note: if we give you one of your own, will you leave ours alone, please?
I like that. And I wonder what those people say if they were asked the question, if you don't want us aborting fetuses that when they're not viable before 3 months, why don't you why can't we have contraception so we don't have unwanted pregnancies? What do they respond to that?
Well, the whole point here, and eventually I suspected we would get around to it, Kate, the whole point here is, you know, Dr. Malthus, courtesy phone, Dr. Malthus,
yeah,
courtesy phone.
It's all Malthusian to me. I every time I see a big tragedy, I just think, well, yeah.
Charles Mann points out in 1493 that we have dodged the Malthusian bullet a couple of times. But that we're running out of places to duck.
Right, right. So back to the question, how close are we to the collapse of the American Empire?
Oh, I think we're in it. I don't think we're close to it. I think we're in it.
Thank you. So why does all this other prattling on, and I'm not discounting other people's concerns, but when I hear, I just can't converse with
Because even when empires collapse, how they collapse matters, Kate.
Oh, okay.
It's not just a uniform caving in from a hollowed-out center. You've got a sufficient background to understand what happens when a building is taken down the wrong way versus the right way. In fact...
I sure as hell do.
Okay.
That's why I cracked up laughing when I heard the towers going down.
We're not going 9/11. Stop it. No, we're not 9/11ing. We're not 9/11ing.
Okay.
This is a larger
civilization
thing.
That's what I'm going to say. Civilization's not going to fall on its own footprint then.
Right.
Brick by brick.
I mean, they can go over sideways and squash a lot of stuff that you'd like not to have squashed.
It's because the charges weren't placed correctly.
Somebody sent me, I can't remember who it was, somebody sent me a video the other day of some bubba who had this 125-foot evergreen next to his house.
Oh, no.
That he decided just had to go. And somebody across the street was standing there videoing it.
Mm-hmm.
And it goes over right into his little ranch-style house. And it goes diagonally across, so there's no portion of the house that's not affected. That's an empire that's left to go to hell willy-nilly. Now, if you put a guy in the White House, like, say, Newt Gingrich, Dr. Newton Leroy Gingrich, amateur paleontologist, who promises the world the nation $2.50 of gasoline, and then tries to deliver on it, it's the same as putting the tree into the den.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, if you try to manage the collapse, then there's something to rebuild out of. And you don't have a tree in the bedroom. So that's why there is relevance to these ongoing discussions. The things that are left, I mean, you'd like to have the basic necessities of life remain so that there's something to come out of the rubble into.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe we'll all just glow in the dark and wait for the two-headed humans to come out of the salt mines. I don't know.
That reminds me of a little boy in Japan after the earthquake and the big cave-in there. I heard a story on CBC that about a little boy in a village who went back in against his he lost his family, I guess. I'm probably just making this up. But anyway, he was alone, and he went back into the village and he saved a dog and some chickens or something, and he's living in the village now by himself taking care of the animals.
Yeah. And it's like some sort of dystopian Spielberg movie, right?
I don't know. I just thought it was pretty heartbreaking. If chaos is always self-correcting, then I'm not really interested in being around in the corrected chaos, because it's going to be a big old mess. But
it's going to be interesting too, because the question of imperial collapse is one of how badly it does.
Right. And what kind of mess?
You know, it's possible that the United States could contract into a sane place where it understands its relative position on the planet.
Hold on just a minute, Bob.
All right.
No, I don't. Let me write it down. Come on in. Am I doing it in the morning? Am I doing them in the morning? Bye. Okay. For what?
We'll be back to the discussion in a moment.
Okay. 10? 10?
Yes.
10, and then between 7 and 8. Okay, thank you.
Matthew.
That's right. I have a 90-year-old neighbor down the hall who can't put drops in her eyes, and she's got glaucoma. And
oh, bless your heart.
Yeah, okay. So we won't waste it, okay? Sorry, folks.
No, that's okay.
The 90-year-old can't.
The music is in the empty spaces as well as played by the notes themselves.
Yeah, I'm so zen. I fill the silence with the eye drops.
Well, eye
anyway.
Drops, smoothies.
Yeah, right. When is Ferg's fantasy that we get off of the planet then?
No.
Oh, okay.
No, he just, you know, no, it's not that, no, he just kind of sees everything coming apart, and no, we're not going to get off the planet, because we're not much interested in getting people off the planet. I really admire this robotic space research, but there's a value to being able to move humans about. But then again, why do I say that when we know what the outcome was the last time white folks discovered a new world?
Mm-hmm. And now they're saying that people who live in non-gravity, you know, in zero gravity, the back of their eyes get flat, and when they come home, if they stay that way too long, suspended too long, they go blind. And so,
any time spent in long-term space travel would have to, you'd have to have some sort of centrifuge or some means of creating some degree of artificial gravity. Yeah, there's no doubt about that.
Yeah. Well, I just, I've always known that we can live in fascism if we just keep our heads down and stay quiet and just let them have it and let them do what they
want.
And
some of us don't have the good sense to do that.
No, I don't. I don't at all. So I'm pretty much doomed at the gate. So I already make too much noise about stuff.
Well, like I've said to Sandra in the past, meet me over under the Eastern Machine Gun Tower. I'll be selling cigarettes,
right?
And bottled water.
Yeah, right. I just living here is kind of like living in a little microcosm of I don't know, white ignorance. There's so much racism, and it's usually directed toward the natives. And anytime I hear anybody make remarks about Obama or him, I usually it's not about politics, it's about racism. And
sure.
sometimes I just sit here, don't even want to go out of the house because there's nobody to talk to. And so ignorant here, I live, they don't have any clue that there's a city of over a million people 400 miles north of us. I mean, if I'd ask anybody if they knew where Edmonton was, they go, yeah, I think it's in Alberta, but they don't have any idea how vital.
Well, it's like riding around on the metro in D.C., Do you know where Farragut Station is? Well, yeah, it's not too far from Smithsonian, but there's no geographic real-time real-world referent.
No. So I live in a sweet little town. There's about, I don't know, maybe a little over 28,000 people here. It's the county seat and state capital, and we've got it's 98.95% white, of course. But we do have Nancy Yogurt and Ben Franklin. I found Nancy's in two stores now, and so it's sometimes they can't afford it, so I just stand there and smile and say, yeah, we're fancy here. And then we have a minor league baseball team, the Brewers, minor league team here, and I don't get to their
what level? A, double A?
The big one, I guess. I don't know.
That's okay. Anyway, you slice it, it's good ball to go watch.
Yeah, I listen to it on the radio, though, because the parking and the stands are so horrible, and it's so noisy that, I don't know, it just sits down in a little bowl, and it's just way too noisy, and so I don't go. I listen to them on the radio, and we have some pretty good, I don't know if it's the Brewers minor league team or not. I thought so.
Well, no, it probably is, but, you know, there's A-ball, there's double-A ball, there's rookie ball, there's triple-A ball. For instance, the Brewers triple-A team is in Nash, Vegas. For a time, their single-A team was in Charleston. Now we're a Pirates franchise.
I thought that Brewers meant Brewers, like the Spokane team used to be the Dodgers. Farm team.
Well, yeah, but there are levels of farm teams.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, you might come into rookie league for a few at-bats, and then you move on to A-ball, and you come up from A-ball, and you get transferred to double-A, and you go from double-A to triple-A. And, you know, when you're playing triple-A ball, it's darn near pro ball. I mean, it's all pro ball. They're all getting paid. But it's triple-A ball. I'm guessing town of 28,000, I'm guessing maybe it's A-ball. It may be what used to be the West Virginia Par.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, here's your answer. If Kate's in Helena, it's a high-level rookie league called the Helena Brewers.
Yeah.
So it's rookie league.
Oh, okay. So I thought it was an A team. All right. Thank you, David. I bet that.
No, that was Marty.
Okay. And I have and it's pretty around here, of course. I live about 20 miles from a 6,500-foot pass going over the this side of the mountains over toward Missoula. And then I'm about 85 miles south of Great Falls, and so that's up in the prairie. And we live kind of down in a bowl, so that central Helena has always got it's a different climate zone here. And so it's an interesting place to live. I didn't think I'd ever wind up in.
Well, you may not know it, but you just picked our bumper music.
What?
Well, I'm not going to tell you.
It's not going to be Belloni.
No, sorry, it's not going to be the Night Fly.
Yeah, I probably should hang up because I hate it when Verizon dumps me, and I just get really mad, and it's embarrassing to get dropped in the middle of a sentence, and I didn't know that I'm talking to dead air and stuff, or you don't know that you're talking to her.
You feel like you're all cranky at the end of the bar talking to your empty mug, don't you?
Oh, God almighty, yeah. Anyway, well, I'm not satisfied with how close we are to the end, but to the collapse, but I'll keep
going. No, well, no, guess, we're in it.
I guess, yeah. Thank you.
It'll all become very, very clear as soon as you set your hands on 1493.
And if the library doesn't have it and it takes too long to order it, I'll go to some bookstore and get it and spend my donation for the horn for the month on the book.
You know what? I would be honored if you did that. Although you can load, you know what? You can load Kindle on your PC and just sit there, and it's $10.
I don't even know anything about that. I don't know about tweeting and Twitter.
No. This is not that. This isn't social media.
Just an e-reader. I have a laptop. I have a little bitty.
And it'll work.
The reading on the screen is just like gets me crazy. I don't even spend that much time on the computer because reading on the screen is just. I'd rather hold the book anyway.
I understand that, but please understand the e-readers are a completely different animal, and it's not like reading computer text because I can't stand that either.
I feel like one time my mother asked me, she'd been a telephone operator for over 50 years, and she asked me one time in the 90s, what's a fax? What does that mean? What do they mean when they say fax? And so I tried to explain to her about telegraphs and how that, all the, you know, the electricity and all that, the signals and stuff.
Data transmission.
And she didn't know. And so now I'm kind of like where my mother was in the 90s. I mean, I think, what does Twitter mean? And what is Facebook? What is Facebook? I don't even know. I don't care.
Facebook is something you get your email. Facebook is something that you don't need.
I don't want any of that. I don't want to know anything. I don't want a blue tooth thing. I don't want a BlackBerry. I just have a little cell phone and a little computer, and that's as far into the century as I want to get, you know, and so I don't want Kindle, and I don't want e-readers, and I don't want all that stuff, so I'm just being a stubborn old lady.
Well, you can be that. and we'll love you just the same.
Yeah, right. Whatever. Well, I guess I'll read 93 and then call back with further arguments or
observations
or bones of contention.
All right, Kate. It's wonderful to hear from you. It's been way too long.
Yeah. Well, I know, but I know.
Yeah, the limitations of aforementioned technology.
Yeah, well, no, I've been on the road, too, but I'm not driving anymore because I wanted to, there was too much bureaucracy and too many retired military and too many rules to follow, and I was just really getting close to being reprimanded or called out or whatever, and so I just decided it was time to quit, so I quit in December, and I'm not driving DAV van anymore, so they're lost. Anyway, so now I'm just home reading a book. So thank you for taking my call, and it was good to hear you. And I miss other people who we used to have calling in all the time. Lots of people. Just wondering where they're at, and you know, I guess I just keep hanging around, and maybe they'll call in. Don't know who to conjure up tonight.
Well, sometimes it's email, sometimes it's phone call.
How about Luke? Where's he? I love him. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Luke checked in a couple of weeks ago.
Oh, he did. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, tell the old boy hi if I'm not on air. All right. I'll see you. I'll leave you where I found you. Take
all right.
Care,
sounds good. See you, Kate.
Bye.
Bye now.
Bye.
And we will go straightway back to the phones, but Kate prefers to be bumped out. And so, like I told her, she picked her bumper music just a minute ago, and I think she'll approve. This is the horn.
I guess it all blew up in Missoula. There just was no other way. After months of going crazy, there was nothing left to say. But when the badly.
No, Bob. No. Try it again.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future. The future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head-on with Bob Kincaid.
Well, at least I got the second button right. Throw the third switch, Bob. 12 minutes past the hour of 7 o'clock here on the East Coast. This is the Horn. It's Friday on the front porch. And, you know, I got a lovely note in from our dear friend Jude out in Seattle area. And she said, impressive. It's so impressive how you're able to engage in serious dialogue, read emails, respond to them, and continue with the caller's next thought. You're an impressive soul on this planet and loved by many. Bless your heart, Jude. But you know what? When you heard the intro run instead of the Coal River Mountain Watch announcement, that's the painful downside to talk radio, to the brand of talk radio ADD that I suffer from. Or maybe it's ADHD, I don't know. But I've got it. Wrong button, Bob. You'll have that. We're going right back to the phones. Got several lines stacked up, but a couple of them open. You know the number, 877-443-2366, 877-443-2366. The numeral 4, head on your nickel, 304-658-3333. And speaking of buttons, I didn't check the website right before showtime. I don't know if the PayPal button is back up at the website, but and I know that it makes contributing a real pain without it. But if you want to contribute to keep the program going, all you have to do is log into your PayPal account and do send money and use bobkincaid@gmail.com. It's the same email address that's attached to the PayPal button on the website. And then click personal and choose gift. And that way you won't none of the transaction will be eaten up in transfer fees. Okie doke. Let's see. To the phones. It is, after all, Friday on the front porch. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob.
Sandra.
Hey, so let me get this straight. So Obama was standing in front of some pipes talking about our energy solutions and fast-tracking half of this Keystone pipe thing. Is that what he's so-called doing?
Yeah. From Oklahoma South, because, after all, they don't care if they get poisoned.
Okay, but, you know, I don't understand. I mean, is the sort of ignorance so overwhelming that the president can't use these opportunities to sort of explain that the oil that's drilled here or discovered here is put on the global market and that there's no correlation between...
Yeah, that's one of those little teachable moments he kind of missed, didn't he?
Well, it's just bizarre to me because, I mean, the whole article is like, worried about gas prices, you know, the White House does X, Y, and Z, and it's always related to increasing domestic oil production, and it doesn't make any sense because it doesn't work because all the product is for a world audience, and so whatever we do is a drop in the bucket, and it's just weird because the line of attack is so bizarre because you can produce video and audio of the right-wing pigs going on about how Bush has no control over gas prices, on and on and on. I mean, I really don't understand what kind of...
My only observation out of that whole thing, Sandra, was that I thought, you know, geographically or politically or whatever, Oklahoma is Tom Coburn and Inhofe. And Inhofe reached recently, and this is, yeah, it's just politics. Inhofe recently got on board and helped by 77-20 to pass the transportation bill in the Senate. So you go to Oklahoma and you make a nicey talk about them, how bad they want the thing, and you talk meanwhile about the fact that and you know it's true, they're opening up crap places for drilling that they ought not.
Well, no, but the thing is that but
it's all a matter of placating, isn't it?
Well, it's not just placating; it's perpetuating a lie upon the American citizen who, at the same time, keeps going to the gas pumps expecting that, well, if they are doing X, then Y should be happening. And the reason why Y isn't happening is, A, like I said, you know, all this product is put on a global market. B, there's speculation going on for a percentage of it. And more interestingly is commodities are inflationary and the dollar has been debased. So we're paying more for everything that matters for you and I, for regular people, food, fuel. That's just going through the roof. And, you know, there's all sorts of reasons for that, but I think one of the bigger reasons that's never discussed is the debasing of the dollar. I mean, you can't just do quantitative easing for the last 4 years without some impact. And, you know, they all don't say it, but I'm sure there's a drive the dollar in the dirt policy, and you know what I'm saying, to
boost manufacturing, export sales, blah blah,
right, that kind of BS. But it also is causing this kind of permanent hike in the oil prices, because you have the Brent or one of those indices, it's just at $100 or more all the time now, no matter what geopolitical supply and demand.
Well, especially the demand part of it.
Well, nothing changes. We've been in a slump for years now. If you look at this index, which is the measurement of the containers, that shit has flatlined completely, you know, it measures containers going back and forth. So the world demand is at a low. Now, I think the trend for it is always up because the source, oil is in a decline, you know, like macroly speaking. But for our immediate needs, this is just a load of crap. I mean, we're being, much like people who save money, we're being screwed over by federal monetary policies that are intentional here. I mean, you know, you're trying to save, and the interest rates are like nothing on purpose. It's a terrible situation. The interest rates are low in order to save and prop up the rich. I mean, that's the only thing.
Well, right, and when we, you know, the old school of saving comes from, you know, I remember being a little kid and I had a savings account, and you hand them your bank book and you make your little deposit and they write it down and you can sit there and you can watch your money grow. That was the way it was taught.
No, but right now...
But there's no reason to go to a savings bank or a savings account or... you know, you're right. The interest rates are so. What does that do? That drives people into the loving arms of the market, doesn't it?
Yeah, and it's just horrific though, because it's you know, it's policies that are, you know. So don't tell me that there is a free market. I'm so sick to death of it, because all this sort of macro manipulation and monetary manipulation is to the detriment of, if I may use this frame, the 99%. And to the benefit of the 1% or even the 0.01%, because there's no reason why the gas prices should be this high. except for fucked up policies that are doing us over, because you know, we can't sustain these sort of prices.
Yeah, it's not just that in 1996 under Bill Clinton, gasoline was $1.30 a gallon or whatever. It was a different $1.30, and I think that's what you're getting at, isn't it?
Yeah. No. When Clinton was in office, we hadn't quantitative ease and printed money to the tune of $7 trillion. Okay, with the click of a button, the click of a keys. I mean, that sort of stuff. You know, people sit around thinking la la la, but there's no way that you can flood the market with that sort of money creation and not, you know, cause some problems, you know, with the economy to our detriment. Don't get me wrong, I'm not going on the Ron Paul trip. That's not what I'm saying.
No, I didn't think you. In fact, Andy sent me an article earlier in the day. I guess Ben Bernanke delivered a broadside against Ron Paul.
What did he say?
Earlier, because he was doing some sort of presentation, and I guess somebody asked him a question about why can't we go back to the gold standard, Andy said, and I think Bernanke's had it up to here with Representative Ron Paul and his craziness. That man's nuts. Federal Reserve Chairman Ben Bernanke headed back to the classroom Tuesday and defended the Fed against its most outspoken critic, Ron Paul. In a lecture otherwise about Fed history and the Great Depression, Bernanke devoted 4 slides to discussing problems of the gold standard. And one of the things he said is, to have a gold standard, you have to go to South Africa or someplace and dig up tons of gold and move it to New York and put it in the basement of the Federal Reserve Bank of New York, and that's a lot of effort and work, and there's not enough gold on the planet.
Well, and not only that, but the constraints of it, if you want to have a sort of example of it, look at the fucking euro. You know, you know, that's a sort of a version of that. You see what's happening with it. There's no freedom for the countries involved. You know, I mean, the gold standard is not gonna, no, not if you're gonna continue with this kind of globalized business. And that you saw what happened in the 30s. Countries that let go of the gold standards recovered a lot faster than the ones that hung on to it.
Right.
So,
and
fact of history.
At the risk of becoming dull talking about this book, all you need is to spend a little bit of time reading about what precious metals commodities did to the most advanced economy on the planet, namely China, in the 15th and 16th and 17th centuries, and you can't help but be struck by the notion of, I don't want to live that way, because, you know, the value of silver halved in less than 100 years because there was so much of it dumped into the market because of the Spanish ownership of the South American mines. That's no way to live.
Well, and I mean, I don't, you know, the problem with the Fed for me is just the lack of transparency. I think if, you know, we had this sort of partial audit courtesy of Sanders and I think, I don't know, who was
Ron
that?
Paul.
Paul, Ron Paul and the guy from Florida who lost the election. And, you know, but I think that the Fed could use more transparency, you know, for sure, because the dribs and drabs of what they have done over the last 4 years, you know, we need to know, because they seem to be bailing out or underwriting banks worldwide. And, you know, that is the problem. And if you're going to do some sort of internal devaluation without letting the folks know, see, that's a problem. Because now Obama's out there trying to spin some fake story about how if we keep drilling and destroying our environment, we'll have cheaper gas prices. And it's just a load. You know, it's not going to happen. I just don't understand his handlers. I don't understand where they're coming from. But anyway, that's all I wanted to say about that, because I was thinking, now this is, well, stupid. And the next stupid thing is, have you heard about this jobs thing? Jumpstart.
Oh, our business
startups.
Yeah.
Listen, that is the end of Glass-Steagall Part 2.
Oh, that's no, that's stomping glass. That's Glass-Steagall's on the ground bleeding, and this is stomping
it. Yeah, it's going to get rid of, you know, more regulation that has been in place for decades. For example, if you're a company, you know, say you and I, say, hey, Bob, let's, you know, do this glossy company brochure perspective hell. You can put that shit in front of investors, and they can invest up to the tune of $2 million without any oversight whatsoever.
Or any real meaningful disclosure, and you can do it on Twitter.
Right, and the thing is that you have to file some stuff, but, you know, oh, shit, who's going to be verifying that? Up to $2 million. And then there's this sort of crowdfunding, which I call crowdfrauding.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just, all this is just going to be on steroids. Not only that, but analysts can now, they're going to ditch a rule that prevented analysts from telling you one thing about a stock and deriding it on the out the other side of their mouth. So they're going to bring that back. I mean, it's just, it's incredible. And the Obama administration is pushing it, and I think it's passed the Senate. I don't know where it's at now, but it's pretty close to going to his desk. So, and it's just in the meanwhile, we got to hear all about whatever. And I'm just shaking my head thinking, hello, hello, hello. This is like the Commodities Futures Act again. I mean,
The House passed it in one form.
Well,
Harry Reid announced that he really couldn't get it through the Senate fast enough. Dick Durbin, on the other hand, stood up and said, you know, we ought to take a look at this.
Yeah.
And the Obama administration said, well, you know, there's some nice stuff in there, but we really think there needs to be more regulatory oversight.
Yeah, but they're not. I'm telling you, this is, you know, this is just, it looks, from what I've read, it just seems really problematic because they're like, oh, well, one protection is that if you can't spend any more than 10% of your income in an investment, or if you have less than $100,000, blah, blah, blah. But, I mean, that, I just see Nigerian email on steroids, man.
You know where my little mind went, Sandra?
What?
Given the timing and everything that went on with Oxymoron Gate.
Yeah.
I saw a whole, I could just imagine those ad executives at Premier Radio Networks saying, this is going to be a fertile field. Because it's right-wing talk radio has always been known for the dodginess of its ads, whether it be Buy Gold Now or vacuum cleaners that pick up bowling balls or Swedish mattresses or herbal erection remedies or natural hair growth goo, all these things that the rubes buy. Can you imagine crowdsourcing some fly-by-night startup on the Rush Limbaugh show? Can you imagine how much that'll garner?
Well, it's just, I don't know. Listen, I just think that if the SEC and all these other groups are coming out just sort of, you know, screaming about how bad this is going to be, you have William Black talking about it's going to keep him and any sort of white criminal type investigators, you know, job security. I mean, a lot of different people are like going,
it's a pretty impressive list of people saying, you know, this isn't such a good idea.
Right. So anyway, I just, you know, it's just really disturbing. It's like, you know, they're just captured by all the money in politics. So there's no other reason to assume this, because the only groups who are pushing this are the bottom feeders, you know, the payday people.
Yeah.
Who all ends up being Bank of America, Wells Fargo, J.P. Morgan, and Citi. You know, it's all the same. It's all one big nightmare that's just, you know, always crafting ways using the government to screw us out of the rest of the pennies. I mean...
Right, because they've gotten all the big stuff. Now they're coming back to turn us upside down and shake our pockets.
It's mind-boggling. But anyway, and it's like, I don't really know what can be done, because the Obama administration, like, oh, you know, we'll be signing it. And it's just a joke, because... That's what Clinton did. He was smiling. They were all smiling when they signed the repeal of the Glass-Steagall. And that took all of a decade to completely destroy, annihilate this economy. And here we go again. It's just sort of like, I'm just dumbfounded.
Right, and everybody smiling is smiling because I'll be out of here and I'll have my own money when this hits the fan.
No. At the same time, while you have that sort of deregulatory nightmare, you got this horrific person who's, I guess, is a sociopath. This Ryan person.
Eddie Munster. No, yeah.
Yeah, it's too much. It's like, dude, you are kidding yourself or anybody else with this bullshit that you keep coming up with year after year. I mean, I am so sick to death of him. Why don't he put a hoodie on? Okay, I won't say no more.
Well, Geraldo, God, Geraldo in the hoodie.
I'm just saying, you know, it's just sort of like, are you kidding me with that? That whole thing was reprehensible, but it was also, you know, it's fodder. It's like, what are you talking about, you know?
Well,
shot down pretty immediately, I thought.
His own kid!
Is he back? Oh, his kid did, too?
His kid said, I'm ashamed of my father.
I mean, because it was just beyond the beyonds. I mean, it's no surprise. He's sitting on Radio Rwanda saying that crap. But, I mean, it looked like he was...
Well, the first substantial coverage of Trayvon Martin case on Radio Rwanda was to let Geraldo opine that the hoodie was as much to blame as the gun.
First we had Sean Hannity talking about, could it have just been a tragedy, an accident? We had that song and dance first. And then we had Al Capone talking about, you know, whatever. And it's just like, oh, no. So that all, and Obama waded in, you know, I'm like, okay, sweetie. And sure enough, oh my God, the right wing, they had a hissy? They're going crazy already. I was like, oh no, you know, Drudge Report and...
What the hell is wrong with it? I mean, he wasn't commenting on guilt or innocence. All he said was, if I had a son, he'd look like Trayvon.
Oh, and it's just that they can't handle that. You know, because I thought his comments were sweet, actually.
It was humane.
I thought it was great. I was really pleased to hear about it. And I knew that...
You know why the right wing's upset? Because they really wanted him to call out the new Black Panthers to go take care of business.
Well, yeah, but, you know, it's too much. But anyway, I don't get me wrong. It's not like I don't understand the position he's in, but I was thinking, damn, Obama, you got to step for this one. This is not going to go away for you, and you're going to lose some votes amongst Black folks with this one. I guess someone whispered in his ear because he rolled out on that. Because I'm thinking, I was thinking there's no way he could not come up with something, and he did, so.
It was astute, frankly.
And it was directed to the parent. I mean, anybody in their right mind can't fault what he's saying. I'm sorry. I thought that it was pretty,
Right, but the right wing is not in its right mind.
Well, no. But no matter what the man do, they're gonna say something crazy. That's why I was thinking, you need to go ahead because, this is well and truly beyond what you need to be worrying about for your election. So, I mean, it's like whatever. I mean, I just hope that...
Well, he needed to break the silence, and he broke it appropriately.
Yeah.
And meanwhile, yesterday or today, this is one of those run screaming around the room moments, Sandra. The NRA was imploring Governor Mark Dayton of Minnesota to sign a Stand Your Ground law there.
Yeah.
A Stand and Blaze law there. They have no shame.
Just to let people know, you know, who's in charge.
Right, yeah. It's like, we ain't backing down.
Right.
We're not.
But the connection with that Alec, you know, it's really...
Alec drafted the bill.
Really disturbing.
This latest development that I just read a few minutes ago, Sanford City Commissioner Velma Williams... I'm proud of her.
I saw that.
She said she's afraid that he'll flee the country.
Well, I'm surprised he ain't fled already.
And who's to say he hasn't?
Exactly. No, that's what I mean. I'm just thinking, you know, what makes you think he's not? Yeah, exactly. But anyway, because I saw pictures of that rally. That looked to be massive.
It was huge.
And, you know, the one down in Florida, that looked huge.
But there have been rallies in New York, too.
Yeah, I saw the one in New York. I was looking at that. They had some streams.
And now the National Bar Association and its president, John E. Page, has written to Eric Holder saying, we join the call for the immediate arrest of Mr. Zimmerman to avoid additional harm to the public.
Well, yeah, now they're talking...
The National Bar Association, the NBA was the group that was formed alongside, I think, the National Lawyers Guild when the fine, white, upstanding white folks of the American Bar Association wouldn't let in persons of color.
Oh.
Yeah. What's his name? The police chief has stepped aside temporarily.
That's a joke. The thing is, though, apparently, you know, it wasn't no stepping aside. They had to step up to him and say, you need to go away. I mean, he was seriously pressured.
Yeah, take a powder.
Just some, you know, and this whole temporary stuff, I guess it's just out his ass, because I have a hard time imagining that guy will be back. You know what I mean?
And by the way, I'm proud to report that I was asking the question about why aren't more people drawing the line between Emmett Till and Trayvon Martin.
It's been mentioned.
It's been done, yeah, and it was done very eloquently by a guy who broadcasts in this same time slot over on the satellite radio, Mark Thompson.
It's been discussed in those terms. I mean, I really appreciate these parents talking about, I can't let my child out. You need to arrest this person. You know what I'm saying? I mean, the sort of delay in understanding how damaging this is sort of mind-boggling, but I'm glad that it's, I just worry that this man is not going to be charged.
And, did you see Jonathan Turley's blog post about it? He says that there are a lot of obstacles to charge and conviction.
Right.
And it's not that there are obstacles because there was something wrong with Trayvon Martin. It's because there are obstacles there that were deliberately put in place by that godforsaken stand and blaze rule. I mean, he's entitled to be believed. Zimmerman is, after how many BS phone calls to 911?
Right. I mean, it's too much. And he obviously had some sort of issue with, black men.
It's pretty clear. And the one thing, if he flees the country, he's going to have to do it with one of those Mission Impossible rubber masks on, because I don't think he can leave the house right now, can he? Or wherever it is that he is. He's got to be in deep hiding. He can't be out walking around because everybody knows his face, right?
I guess. I mean, who knows what goes on down there? I mean, when you have the DOJ, we got to send our community relations, one of them missions, they're all worried about race riots or something.
I'm always worried about cop riots, Sandra.
Well, I don't know. The thing is that I don't know if they're thinking down there that old time and this will go away. I think the only thing that's going
to
satisfy.
Yeah, they're waiting for the 24-hour news cycle to just bury it.
Yeah, but this. Yeah, as long as this man is walking around after killing this child, I don't think it's going to stop, because. Who's explaining it to justify this kid being killed? I'm not hearing any sort of explanation. What, because of that law? I mean, is that law unconstitutional? Where's the due process in this man just gunning this person down?
Well, why is it, and none of that stuff was considered. It was just between the NRA and Alec, it was just hustled through as it's been hustled through in all these other, these 20 other states, without consideration for, things like a civil rights claim, a 1983 claim.
Well, not only that, but I mean, the sort of dispersing of the state. It's like, well, hold on a minute. So now a person can play judge, jury, and executioner. You know what I'm saying? It's like this man's, this kid's civil rights is, it's so many issues here. I can't even believe that these laws are on the book.
But The funny thing is, we talked about them when they were passed, and the people who opposed the bills said these things will be used for disproportionate killing of minorities.
Oh, yeah, no, I mean, I was looking at a report on, like, five different organizations, attorneys and stuff had commented on this law when it passed in 2005, and they all painted this sort of scenario, possibly, along with people of color being adversely affected, if I may use that term. It's just like, wow. So here we are.
And the NRA knew it, and the NRA wanted it. Because that's the other thing that doesn't arise out of this. Nobody has dared say it. The NRA is a racist organization. The NRA is like the Klan. It's almost exclusively white.
Well, doesn't it sort of reside in the idea that, oh, you know, these white men, they got to protect themselves?
Yes.
From various shades of
go pick up the American Rifleman and count the persons of color in it.
Yeah, well, it's just kind of like, you know, once again, and I can be pretty extreme, but I'm thinking, what is stopping these parents from arming themselves and their damn kids? You understand what I'm saying?
Right. Well, the only thing that's stopping them is their common sense.
Well, I understand, but you know, I mean, that's.
But you know, but that's why I said George Zimmerman has to be staying in the house somewhere, because anybody, this is the ugly side of their stand and blaze rule, the part that they don't like to think about, is that whole bunch of people in Florida are scared to death of George Zimmerman now, and he presents an overt and ongoing threat to their health and safety. So the first time somebody with a gun sees George Zimmerman walking around in Florida,
exactly,
bang.
And that's the thing, and it's just sort of like, and then what?
Well, and then it's on.
Well, I'm just saying, that's what I mean. I mean, it's nothing but sort of an arms race.
Well, there's something that undergirds all of this, Sandra, and I don't like to think about it, and I know you don't. And I think there's a lot of work being done not thinking about it. But these things are also incitements to race war. And I don't even like that phrase because, you know, that's so freighted and so loaded and it's got such an ugly history. But there are people out there that would like to see this country devolve into random, more random, mindless bloodshed than we already have.
Yeah, well, I just mean, you know, what I'm saying is that if there's no legal remedy or any means of bringing this to a fair conclusion, well, I'm sorry. I can see it escalating pretty damn easily.
Yeah, well, in law school, they describe that as self-help.
Oh.
And they advise against it.
Right. Well, I don't think it's a good idea, but I certainly...
But would it be surprising? Hell no.
I can understand.
No. Oh, by the way, you got fan mail. Kathy in Arizona wrote in. She said, it's always great to hear Sandra. I used to live in Sacramento at 23rd and North N Streets, not North, 23rd and N, and I'm hoping to move back. So,
all right, yeah.
Somebody working on being a neighbor. Andy wrote in, and he said, the new jobs, J-O-B-S, it ain't a jobs act, or a new jobs bill, is propaganda for the Venture Capital Welfare Act. He said, regarding your conversation with Sandra, the venture capital community is turning the screws on Mr. Obama to loosen up investor protection regulation so they can get their money out of a floundering economy, poor IPO market. This bill truly sets us back, a deregulatory giveaway, turning us way, way back in investor protections. Ex-SEC chief accountant Lynn Turner has blasted the legislation for opening us up to massive fraud perpetrated on investors.
Yeah, no, I mean, it just sounds... Well, anyway, I don't know. I mean, I understand... But the whole deception of calling it anything jobs, you know, it's so disturbing. Along with him posing in front of the pipes, and so it's just all in the name of getting reelected, I guess, but...
Well, that's what everything is for the time being.
Yeah, but it's that whole thing is damaging because... We already seen this movie before.
Yeah.
We should be going the other way.
Do we have a couple of seconds for some shallowness?
Oh yeah, of course.
Well, yeah, it's Friday. I had a note in before the show started from Dr. John in New York. He said, the real question facing me, I just realized something. Jets training camp is held at SUNY Cortland, State University of New York, Cortland, which is less than an hour's drive from my house. I'm thinking I need to head up there, maybe do some participant observation of Tebow Mania. The only question is how hard I should troll them.
Well, no, but he got introduced via helicopter. I was like, what kind of scene was that?
Yeah, I mean, they don't even do that. They only do that for Santa Claus around here.
Well, I'm just saying, I said helicopter? And anyway, I mean, the thing is, though, I object because of the eye candy factor. I'm sorry. I need to look at Sanchez. I don't, you know, what? They're not concerned about the female viewership?
It's everything. But the best part of all of this, you're familiar with this Pat Robertson thing, right?
Wow, what he just is a
can we enjoy the audio real quick?
Yes, please.
This is precious. Pat Robertson's upset. This is...
Well, the Denver Broncos have traded quarterback Tim Tebow to the New York Jets. That trade comes after Tebow lost his starting quarterback position in Denver to newly signed Peyton Manning. Tebow appears to be excited about the trade. He calls New York a great market, great city, but many football analysts do not believe he's a good fit for that team, who already have a quarterback in Mark Sanchez that they signed to a new contract. Still, some believe Tebow's Christian character may have a positive influence on a team that endured its share of turmoil in the locker room last season. I'll tell you, there are a lot of disappointed fans of the Jacksonville Jaguars. That's where Tim Tebow is from, Pat, and a lot of folks down there were hoping that the Jaguars would sign him.
Well, my take on it, and I know the public relations doesn't bear me out, but I think the Denver Broncos treated him shabbily. He won 7 games. He brought them into the playoffs, for heaven's sakes. I mean, they were a nothing team. He rallied them together with spectacular last-minute passes, and, you know, when they beat Buffalo, I mean Pittsburgh, excuse me, it was a
Buffalo,
tremendous
Pittsburgh.
Victory. And you just ask yourself, okay, so Peyton Manning was a tremendous MVP quarterback, but he's been injured. If that injury comes back,
and I'm praying it will,
Denver will find itself without a quarterback. And in my opinion, it would serve them right.
It's so hideous.
What about that? What about that guy with the big old head from Notre Dame? He's still there. They wouldn't be without a quarterback, would they?
His head is large. That's a damn sure. Listen. He ought to be ashamed of himself.
If you watch the video, and you got to go watch the video, he's kind of all doddery and looking down. He's not even looking at the camera anymore. He's receiving transmissions from Jeebus or something. Yeah. And the broken thought of the way he talks, serve him right. That's what it is. Serve him right. They treated him shabbily. You know, you'd think that Tim Tebow was the only human being on the field to hear Pat talk about it. Yeah, when he brought him back against Buffalo or Pittsburgh or maybe Azusa. What?
Not only that, but, you know, it's kind of like, you know, they make, you know, Tim Tebow, okay, yeah, I guess he might look simple, but that fool had a choice and he chose to go to New York. Okay? He ain't that simple. So he wanted to go where they wanted him.
And the folks at TBN are now expecting big things. He's going to bring salvation to the locker room.
Listen, the thing about that, though, is that locker room is hella poisonous. Are you kidding me?
Yeah. That's the thing. I'm getting one of our UK listeners to go put a couple of pounds on Tim Tebow gets caught, you know, running around at some after-hours strip joint, you know, two-thirds of the way into the season.
Yeah, not only that, but, I mean, I don't think he's going to be walking around singing, my God is an awesome God and all that bullshit. He's going to get turned out.
Yeah, well, no, I'm expecting this trip to the Jets to be like an episode of Moral Oral, if you know what I mean.
No, I don't know, but the whole thing is just, I mean, the thing is, like I said before, Elway is looking about as smart as whatever with that move. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
That's a good move. I mean, well, I guess. I mean, if poor old Peyton is taken off the field, then maybe not so good. But they still got that big head.
Yeah, and he's had a couple of years to learn.
Well, Elway got rid of his headache, let's be honest.
Yeah, who wants to have your you're the general manager, you've got two Super Bowl rings, and your football team is being run by public pressure from the fundamentalists in Colorado Springs? Pass, thanks.
Yeah, no, I know. Well, anyway, I mean, it should be entertaining, as we spoke about before. But do you watch the basketball?
I've watched some, but not as much as I'd like to have this time through.
Well, the only thing, you know, I was, you know, on cloud nine because the way Duke was dispatched, I was rolling.
goodbye.
Yeah, I was like, you know, but...
Well, yeah, I think I wrote to David in Tennessee and said, if you step out on your back stoop and you listen very carefully, you'll hear a high-pitched wail coming from the southeast. That's the sound, you know. That's the sound of the wounded ferret, you know, the scream of the Krzyzewski weasel.
Well, every time I think about them, of course, I think about that coach. I don't know if it was Boston College saying Duke is like Leave It to Beaver reruns, always on TV.
Yeah.
You know, so. I thought to myself, yeah, for sure. So goodbye to them. That was quick.
And
was that the first game?
Yeah. Goodbye. Yeah, it was number two taken down by a number 15, and I guess they're just lucky because it's the one thing that still hasn't happened in the NCAA basketball tournament is for a 16 to beat a 1.
Oh.
But here's the fun thing. This is the second time in 7 years that a 15 has taken down Duke.
Oh, okay. Well, so listen, let me ask something. So next week you're going to the Supreme Court challenge, right?
Well, yeah, we're going to be broadcasting next door, but we're going to be on the Hill for that historic occasion, yes.
Well, I mean, because, you know, I've been reading reports that, you know, there's all this sort of conventional wisdom that they're going to overturn it. I mean, what are you hearing?
Well, it's like I said last night. There's no way Clarence Thomas can go home at night if he votes in favor of upholding it.
Yeah, but I still think that the private insurers, you know, have a lot to gain from this. I do wonder if they're going to overturn it, actually, but we'll see.
Well, and it's going to be a zoo-like atmosphere, Sandra, because, as I mentioned, Americans for Prosperity is loading up 50 tour buses full of teabaggers, including the 60-plus association, saying, keep your government hands off my Medicare. And they're all going to be there. And Michelle Bachmann's going to be speaking. She'll probably be telling people about U2 boats and stuff like that. Every lunatic of the hard right wing is descending on those days on Capitol Hill. So I've got to be on the air from noon to three.
Well, don't you think, though, that the Supreme Court is starting to feel that they're a bit, that they're problematic, though? I mean, I do. I think that, I think that the blowback from the Citizen United, you know, they can't be oblivious to it. There's no way.
I just wonder
if they're going to, you know, the constant kind of, the sort of major alterations that they're doing on this country.
Well, the other thing that plays into this as well, if you recall, you mentioned Citizens United. One of the things that I pointed out is that with the Citizens United opinion, it became pretty clear that Alito and Roberts in particular, especially Roberts with that, I'm just here to call the balls and strikes. Remember that? All of his devotion and respect for the ancient American legal principle of stare decisis.
I mean, how many times did he say that?
He perjured himself because there was real precedent for not ruling in Citizens United the way they did. And basically, Roberts and Alito just turned themselves into abject liars. So there's that. That's the thing with the Affordable Care Act. They're also, my God, you want to talk about stare decisis? Sheminy Christmas. It's Supreme Court precedent going back a long way in terms of the case law regarding necessary and proper, the case law regarding general welfare, the case law regarding interstate commerce. And they're going to have to overturn 100 years right. at least of precedent in order to overturn the Affordable Care Act, at which point everything's open.
Yeah, no. I mean, that's what I mean. I think that it's it's horrifying to think. And I also read an analysis, which is not related to this, but that a lot of reasons why you're getting this total onslaught on reproductive is because the pro-privacy groups are like in fear of having a case go to the Supreme Court because they just think that it would be bye-bye to Roe, which I thought was an interesting sort of, you know.
Well, that's what I'm getting at here. This ruling is going to have impacts that go far beyond the Affordable Care Act itself.
Yeah, well, anyway, I mean, and then they'll hear these arguments, and when is the decision going to come out before the election?
I would be surprised if it didn't.
Okay, so this is all politics, huh?
Pure and simple.
Man, I am so disgusted by how the Supreme Court is comporting itself these days. It's really, it just takes me back to, you know, what I read about Marshall. You know, and how disturbed he was that the court weighed in on judicial review in the first place, you know? Because what backs them up, Bob?
Them and what army?
Right. I'm just saying. I just think that, you know, it's, I guess I shouldn't say anything because I also thought that, you know, you'd have people hitting the street with Bush v. Gore, but nothing happened. I just thought, wow, okay.
Yeah, it's no. See, I think the people who are saying that the court will overturn it are doing so predicated not on law but upon ideology. The thing is fairly well grounded in law.
Okay, so, and I also heard a few opinions that if they do, it might be a huge problem for the court and the reaction to it.
Oh, it's a massive problem for the court, and you know what? It's a massive problem for the insurance industry.
Yeah, so I don't know. I'm kind of, slack jaw about how over the top this all is. But
well, look, there's going to be a whole bunch of kids between the age of 22 and 26 who are suddenly going to become uninsured.
Yeah, and a whole bunch of people who won't be able to utilize the pre-existing thing. I mean, there's a lot of stuff that's kicked in already that would just go bye-bye.
Yeah.
Every time I hear that Mitch McConnell, as soon as I become head of the Senate, that's the first thing we're going to do is repeal it. And they're just rushing around.
Well, the reason they've got to do it is because of what I was talking about last night, Sandra. What happens in 2014...
You mean with the expansion of
Medicaid and the end of the asset testing.
Yeah, and
no, because remember, I'm too rich to have Medicaid right now.
No, but it doubles. The threshold doubles, right, to 133% of the...
Yeah, well, making less than $36,000 a year, family of five gets Medicaid.
Right. Okay, well, see, that weren't they estimating sort of 14 million instantly or something behind that?
Yeah, like that.
Yeah. Okay, well, oh, my God, what in the world? Okay, listen, I'll let you
know. All right, you have a wonderful weekend, Sandra.
All right, you too. Bye,
bye now. A reminder, we do have a PRISM West Virginia broadcast coming tomorrow as well. Jack had asked a question earlier. I will tweet. We're going to try to use a new Ustream address. because of what it's cost, because of the bandwidth limits that Ustream imposes. We're going to try to give Prism a its own brand new Ustream address, and when we do that, I will tweet that out, and it'll go to my Facebook page. And I don't know if I'll try to also send an email to News Ninja Susan, and maybe she can get it up on the website. And again, I just mentioned this because I won't be able to do anything next week, and fundraising is what keeps this program on the air. And I'm not going to sit in Washington, D.C. and do the pitch because it's just kind of embarrassing. We don't have our PayPal buttons back up at the website yet because of the vast problems we had from the last hack attack. But you can log into PayPal, and then using this email address, you can PayPal your horn maintenance contribution, bobkincaid@gmail.com. If you select personal and gift, it will keep any of your contribution from being eaten up in transfer fees. Let's see. Just before we go back to the phones, just a couple of emails that came along. Rich in California wrote. He said, "Yesterday you mentioned the all-inclusive high school prom in Georgia, and I recalled something that I received in the mail earlier in the week. I have an appointment with a doctor that I'm seeing for the first time. I was mailed some all-inclusive forms to complete and bring with me to his office. I was surprised to see and impressed with the number of choices for marital status. This was my first time to see partnered and separated as options. If this is the new trend, it's about time." And that's what it, you know, there are things inside the Affordable Care Act, too, that speak to that. Because, and it goes to issues of fear. Tamara writing in, she said, "Is it just me, or does it bother other people that Trayvon Martin is consistently referred to by the media as an unarmed black teen? Why not a kid with candy? Or simply a high school student visiting his father? I know that California often escapes the Stan suffix on your program, you know, Alabama Stan, Mississippi Stan. But believe me, we have our problems with racial profiling, too. Oh, yes. Rampart. Every year, I remember to tell my students the story of Edward C. Lawson when I looked up his Wikipedia entry. This time, one entry caught my eye. On May 12, 2011, Edward C. Lawson died. To date, there has been no obituary." No obituary? What a shame. That man was a personal hero of mine. Tamara says, "If you have time, I'd appreciate it if you'd tell people his story." African-American civil rights activist, plaintiff in the case Colander versus Lawson, 1983. U.S. Supreme Court ruled that a California statute authorizing a police officer to arrest a person for refusing to present identification was unconstitutionally vague. Between March 1975 and January 1977, Edward C. Lawson was detained approximately 15 times as a pedestrian or as a diner in a cafe and asked to present identification. Some detentions lasted minutes, others lasted hours. He was arrested several times pursuant to California Penal Code 647E, but prosecuted only twice with one conviction. The second charge was dismissed. He finally brought a civil rights action against San Diego Police Chief William Colander and others, taking the case through the U.S. District Court and ultimately to the U.S. Supreme Court, which ruled in his favor. He was a direct descendant of a survivor of the 1921 Tulsa race riot and massacre in Oklahoma. He died May 12, 2011. And, as noted, to date, there has been no obituary. Thank you for that, Tamara. Thank you very much. Names worthy of remembering. So we'll take a little break and go back to the phones. It's about 5 minutes past the hour, and we will get through every blinking light. As long as you stay on the line, we will get to the call. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. By way of our good friend Michael, a little music. America,
someone they don't even just pretend. I'm afraid of America. I'm afraid of the world. I'm afraid I can't help it. I'm afraid I can't. I'm afraid of America. I'm afraid of the world. I'm afraid I can't help it. I'm afraid I can't. I'm afraid of America.
Kincaid. This is Friday on the Front Porch on the Horn. Gone next week, just a reminder, but not gone. We will have, now here's how it's going to work. I'm going to be live noon to 3 Eastern, so that's 9 to noon Pacific on the regular Horn stream. And then it will all be replayed. I will upload it to Agnes, and she will replay it on the stream here from 6 to 9. My colleague Rick Smith will join us on the first day of broadcasting. I had expected, having Guy James join us, but I received a note from Guy saying that he was under the weather and couldn't make the trip. And that makes it less of a trip for me, because we have... Well, we always have a magnificent time together, and he will be much in my thoughts while I'm there. So that's how it'll work. And then, again, live tomorrow from 3 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time with a Dr. Bill O'Brien, Professor Keith Willie, American History Chat from the PRISM series. PrismWV.org, PrismWV.org is the website for that. And then we're broadcasting Monday and Tuesday, and on either Wednesday or Friday, or possibly Thursday, will be a travel day, as they say in the sports world. So we'll just keep things, we'll try to keep things posted as possible, let you know when we're back in the studio here. You know, me and that mouse in my pocket. Yeah, right. So, to the phones, right? Hey, welcome to the program. Okay, that's one open line. Hey, welcome to the program. And two. Welcome to the program.
Brother Bob.
Cossack, what's happening?
Not much, yourself.
Trying to get ready to blow out of here. I guess I'm going to be leaving here at crazy early on Sunday morning to get to D.C. nice and early to get everything teched out and set up so it's not such a flurry of chaos and craziness.
Oh, Dark Hundred, huh?
Yeah, exactly. Or as John Fox and his pals in Australia would say, spare us fart.
Yeah. Oh, God. You know, I keep going over in my head this idiotic thing in, down here with that lunatic Zimmerman. And, you know, at first I said, well, he's white and no, he's a Latino. And he's got black people in his family, so he can't be racist. What?
Well, if you run around talking about black folks and saying things like these assholes always get away, I don't care what your bloodline is.
Or an effing coon.
Well, there's that.
Yeah, I mean, that was on the 9/11 tape, for God's sake.
Yes, it absolutely is.
You know, and another thing, he is a wannabe cop.
Yes, self-appointed neighborhood watch captain. Neighborhood watch field marshal.
Of a watch list of one.
Yeah.
I mean, he had already been complained about by his neighbors.
Yes.
For his aggressive behavior.
And the homeowners association did exactly nothing.
Correct. Well, they complained. Big deal.
I don't even know that they complained that much.
Yeah. Well, you know how it is when those people are in our neighborhood.
Yeah.
I mean, again, I don't care what his bloodline is. He's got a problem. That's kind of obvious.
He's probably got a bunch of them.
Yeah. As you said, when he was talking to the dispatcher, 9/11 dispatcher, and dispatcher said, are you following this man? Yes. And he says, okay, we need you not to do that. As soon as he heard the word "okay," that's where his inputs shut off.
Right, he had just been validated.
Yeah, okay. That's all he heard.
And as Jonathan Turley notes in his analysis early on, he's got his hand in his pocket. He's setting up. his claim of rational fear? This guy knew what he was doing.
Yeah, but I mean,
like I said before, he was going hunting.
Correct. He was hunting. It was not not going hunting. He was hunting.
You know, depending on what it is you're hunting, stalking is a part of it.
Correct.
Because remember, Trayvon thought he had lost him.
Yeah.
And then there he was again, 70 feet from home.
Never made it. You know, that's one of the things that, on a more cheerful note, if such can be had, my brother took me out on my birthday a few days back for a dinner. And you know Panama City Beach.
Sure.
It is the spring break capital.
Yes, it is.
And I saw a group of kids. Predominantly white. There were, however, blacks, Hispanics, and I even believe an Asian or two in the group. Thing is, things have changed so much, Bob, that from the way the group dynamics, there was nothing other than us in that group. I mean, we have come... trust.
Were they wearing hoodies?
A long way. Huh?
Were they wearing hoodies?
No. But...
You know, in any... And I just have to note... In any other in a responsible journalism organization, Geraldo Rivera's comment that the hoodie was as much to blame as the gun.
Well, that's idiotic.
He wouldn't have a job.
And so is he. But that's, well, does he have one now?
He gets a check.
No. Yeah. I mean, he's. In my mind, he is so totally discredited at this point. You gotta remember, Bob. I remember back when I was a kid, and my parents committed the horrible sin of having some of their friends of darker hue come by for a party. And the next morning, we were greeted with a flaming bag of poo on our doorstep.
I guess you're lucky it wasn't a flaming cross.
That was no place to put one, or else it would have been.
You know, Jim just noted that the whole thing has given a new definition to Neighborhood Watch.
Mm-hmm.
He said, a kid is shot, and the neighbors watched.
Correct. Well, this is almost as bad as Kitty Genovese. Except people actually did something this time around, or tried to. You remember Kitty Genovese, right?
Yeah, the one who, yes, while everybody sat and stood and watched. Oh, by the way, just in case people for anyone who buys into that notion of a post-racial America, that racism is gone from America business, that Tony Snow, who is now roasting on a spit in hell, used to prattle about. I got this from David in South Carolina not too long back. The date of the story is March the 16th, last week. Lexington County, South Carolina. Officers responded to a home in the 100 block of Gray Fox Forest Lane in Lexington County, South Carolina, in Swansea. Found a 3-foot wooden cross burning in the front yard. A man getting up for work saw the cross and called the police. He told deputies he saw a large pickup truck speed by and taillights from a second car as he got closer to the home. Made out of wood from a couple of pallets. Set on fire by gasoline from aerosol cans. Several beer cans were recovered at the scene, too, which will be tested for fingerprints. Two women were at home at the time of the incident. Both women are described as black in the incident report. And then, of course, the usual topper. Lexington County Sheriff's Department spokesman Eric Murrah said, "It is unclear whether or not the incident is racially motivated or if the home was targeted."
Oh, yeah. Nah.
You know, because people burn crosses in yards for all kinds of reasons. You know, you can douse them in citronella and keep the mosquitoes away. Unclear.
Like I said, our only hope is the fact that it is dying out, especially amongst the educated urbans who, you know, live cheek and jowl with these people. You know, I think that was one of the most pernicious things about segregation, was the fact that we did live separate lives. It was separate worlds, quite literally.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
well, consider this. You know, on the one hand, the cross burning. On the other, Cossack, something that David in Tennessee just noted. He said, "It is piling up against the racist." Even David Brooks said today, "The key to a neighborhood watch person is watch. This man is supposed to be eyes and ears, not enforcement." Brooks remarked, "I don't know why the police aren't angry about his interference." Again, from David Brooks, no less. We will. You know what? Here's the true barometer reading, Cossack. Trayvon Martin, his family will know. George Zimmerman will know that the balloon has gone up when Pat Buchanan says there's a problem. And from David Brooks to Pat Buchanan is not a long trip.
No, no, it's not. And
our buddy Ray noting that, he says, "I do believe Juan Williams bought into that post-racial thing for a moment, too. Oops." Yeah,
until he went to the Republican debate.
Boy! Thanks,
hey,
dude.
Boy! Oh, Jesus, yeah. Good grief. Don't these people understand it's over?
No, they don't.
The lost with the...
Well, no, Cossack, they do understand, and that's why they're like this. They know that this is their last... These are the last twinkling rays of a majority white American culture. It's over. It's gone. It's done. It is mathematically impossible for white culture to remain the dominant culture in this country in the next 20, 25, 40 years. Just is. Hey, Cossack, I got to run, brother, but have a good weekend, all right?
our YouTube box, take care, have a good weekend, and have a fun time back in my old stomping grounds.
I'll try to, we'll take a breather and try to relax. I don't know how much fun. It's a lot of work, brother. We'll talk to you later.
All right, take care, Bob.
Bye now. The Cossack calling from North Florida. Yes, I know Panama City. I know Panama City well. Hey, welcome to the program. Nope. Okay. And welcome to the program.
Bob Kincaid and Head On Radio. How are you all out there?
I am well. Good gracious, is this steady?
This is steady. Yes, it is.
Holy mackerel, a blast from the past.
A blast from the past in like, what, 6 years running now?
Yeah.
I was listening on Sandra's call. You're going to be in D.C. I'm glad I called today. I didn't know.
Yeah, it's Monday and Tuesday, and then we'll see what else shakes out. There's going to be some work to be done on mountaintop removal on Wednesday, maybe Thursday. So it'll be home Thursday or home Friday.
Have you done anything else out there since the 5 year anniversary?
Oh, I've been back to D.C. Half a dozen times, maybe closer to a dozen since then.
Awesome.
Doing Radio Rose.
Radio Rose, not White Rose.
No, Radio Row, RadioRow. It's when progressive broadcasters get together at these gatherings of progressive thinking organizations.
Was that maybe the group that gave you some type of award in broadcasting, or just talk radio?
No, it's talk radio. Like for instance, we'll be broadcasting from Capitol Hill Monday and Tuesday at the invitation of a wonderful organization called Families USA, whose mission is access to health care for all Americans. And, of course, with the Supreme Court arguments going on in D.C. on the 27th, that's the purpose for trying to bring the great weight, the great informational weight of data to bear across the country what's important is they understand the value of progressive broadcasting, and that cannot be overstated.
I signed a testimony on that. You know, that's just an alternative outlet to get ideas. You know, a Cossack, he's been around since I was here, and it's oddly enough that when Sandra called, last time I called, which was months ago, I mean, almost closer to a year, Sandra was on the phone. Well, she was the caller in front, one of the callers in front of me. So, I mean, to hear familiar voices, I don't have the internet connection, but you were covering quite a bit there. I tuned in when you were talking about Senator Coburn and the Keystone Pipeline, and then how that they were tying in with gold when he was on the committee there with Goldman Sachs, and they were doing the inquiry into the residential mortgage backed securities.
Right.
That big fallout. And he was actually a pretty star player in that. I kind of lost track as I was drifting back and forth here. I want to talk, but you guys were talking about the gold standard, and I don't want to go too much into that. But the United States is historically, when we did have it, it was a gold reserve standard, completely different situation than gold standard, gold reserve.
Well, yeah, I mean, we did. There was a time in this country when we, when you could go and pay for something with a $10 gold piece. They were about the size of a pinhead. But yeah, you're right. It was good. But the thing is, it was backed by it so that, and we've had the silver standard as well. With everybody's seen a silver certificate note somewhere along the way.
Sure. And they were like still going with that candy up until somewhere in the 90s when they took that off. It was actually still, silver was still in a monitor, I think, at that time. But you guys talked about a lot of stuff there, and Glass-Steagall came up. I mean, and then you went, and I know in 2008, when we had the, you know, both parties were fielding candidates, and Senator Obama actually got the nomination. The Republicans, Ron Paul was running, and you didn't like Ron Paul back then, and I just wanted you to educate me a little bit on your position on why you do not like Ron Paul.
For starters, he's un-American. There's that story that I can't get over, Steady, about how he praised a butcher. He's still out there telling this story. There was a butcher in his neighborhood in World War II when everybody else was sacrificing for the good of the effort to defeat global fascism. And there was a butcher who flouted the rationing rules, and on Saturday he would quietly sell whatever you wanted for a price. And Ron Paul has repeatedly praised that as being the free market solving a government meddling problem, because the rationing that we needed to defeat global fascism was just meddling on the part of the government, as far as Ron Paul is concerned. You know, he's an isolationist. He opposes war, yes, but he's wrong. He's right for the wrong reasons. His opposition to the war is not the same. As my opposition to war.
Okay.
My opposition to war is because war is wrong. Ron Paul's opposition to war is because he would rather let the entire world burn up, and let the United States reap the benefits in the ashes. He has no regard for the right of a woman to control the workings of her own body. It goes on and on and on. He is just a sickening, loathsome, revolting individual.
Wow, okay, I didn't really get that, but let me ask you about the butcher story. You said that's still part of his campaign. He goes around promoting.
Oh, he loves to tell that story. It was repeated as recently as a profile on him in the New York Times a month or so ago. And I can't get over that, Steady, because, you know, my parents, my grandparents, my entire extended family sacrificed on the home front for the benefit of their children, their sons, their brothers, their fathers, their uncles, their cousins, who were fighting the global war against fascism. They sacrificed on the home front and understood that they were part of the effort. But Ron Paul didn't want to be part of the effort. He wanted all the meat he could eat, and be damned if the soldiers starved at the front. And for that, I would spit on him.
Wow. I've never heard that story, Bob.
And then, you know, there's his little black problem, but that's been pretty well covered.
Yeah, and I respect your position on things, and I think you educated me a little bit on that. My phone, being in queue for so long, is going on battery, but I wanted to touch on something just before we go here. The Glass-Steagall came up while you were talking, and in my position on some of these things, pulling the charter of the Federal Reserve and implementing the Glass-Steagall again is about the only mechanism which the people can force the representatives to implement at this time, which will really bring arrest of hyperinflation.
Oh, no. Did I lose Steady? Oh, we hear from Steady once in a great long while, and then I'll lose him. Dadgummit. Let me at least try to go where he seemed to be leading, and that is this. I don't think you can just make the Fed go away. I think greater transparency is the key to that. You really, really don't want a commoditized monetary system, because it'll be up and down like a damn yo-yo. The whole point, you know, the Fed was only conceived after watching 150 years of American economies going up and down like a yo-yos, and panics and depressions and recessions. It was an attempt to stop that. Yes, it benefits the rich, but in the end, who really pays in a repression, in a recession, a depression, or a panic? The poorest are the ones who pay most dearly, because they starve to death. Here in Appalachia, there are a lot of stories of shopkeepers who drove themselves into ruin, continuing to feed a community on credit, even when they knew that they were doing it to their own detriment. My grandfather was one of those people. His little mini empire out the road that consisted of a sawmill, a store, and a post office was ruined. But for as long as he could get credit from his suppliers, he extended credit to his neighbors. because the alternative was watching them starve to death. And that's always in the back of my mind. Yeah, David in Tennessee is right. Ron Paul, first and foremost, he is an aggressive racist. There's no getting around it anymore. None whatsoever. Let's see. Welcome to the program.
Good evening, Brother Bob.
Well, hey, Kevin, what's happening?
Well, not a whole lot. I just thought I'd check in before you end your week and ask you about the thing on Monday and Tuesday. So you'll be broadcasting from, I think I figured it was 10 to 1 Mountain Time. And then is anybody else from the Horn going to be on live?
I don't know if Rick's planning on being live or if he's just planning on pre-recording everything.
Okay.
That's about all there is. You know, Guy James would have been there, but Guy is too ill to travel. So that pretty much makes it me. And then Tuesday, it is only me.
Yep.
So you might try at 7 a.m. Mountain Time to see if Rick is going live.
Okay.
Because he would be 9 to noon.
Yep. Okay. Well, 7 a.m., there's a 50-50 chance I'll be up or not. So, I wish I could be out there. Like I said in my email to you a couple days ago, that Trayvon Martin thing really makes me wish I could be back in Florida to join the protest because, you know, I just haven't gotten over that he hasn't been arrested yet, that Zimmerman hasn't been arrested. And it really upsets me, and I know it's a racial thing as far as Zimmerman is concerned, but to me, this has nothing to do with race. It has to do with humanity. And it wouldn't matter to me if Trayvon was white, black, or blue. The guy shot him in cold blood.
But, you know, I think that that observation that was made in the email, why is he described as an unarmed black male? Why isn't he described as a boy with a can of tea and a bag of Skittles?
Yep. And, you know, that's what makes it so. And the other thing I mentioned in my email was the fact that the dispatcher, the first dispatcher, should have never let him off the line. If you caught the end of that conversation, it was like him and that dispatcher were buds. And, okay, I'll talk to you later, buddy, you know. And I just was like, oh, my God, you don't do that, particularly when he, you know. You've gotten how many calls from this guy before? And I know that has to pop up on the screen somewhere, how many times this person's called. And, you know, so all the way around, the Stanford Police Department has just totally not done their job. And
I don't think they wanted to.
No.
Remember, this police chief had to be compelled a couple of years previously. A police lieutenant's son had viciously stomped an African-American homeless man.
Yep.
And the police chief had to be compelled to file charges against the police lieutenant's son.
Yep. Yep. So.
So, there, you know, there's a history.
But even then, you know, I don't understand. If you're a policeman investigating that thing, can you really turn your head from what happened?
That's the interaction, Kevin, of Florida's stand and murder law.
Right.
It's not stand your ground, it's stand and murder.
Because
the police are compelled by statute to believe the information they're presented. And when somebody's just been gunned down, there's only one witness and dead men tell no tales.
Yep. I guarantee if George Zimmerman were to be gunned down by somebody in the same situation, that there would be a full-on investigation just right away, you know. But since it was a black kid, and now, well, we don't know that he lives in the neighborhood, and I'm sure those police on the scene didn't bother to check that out until much later.
Well, I hate all these references to his clothing, and I'm not criticizing you, Kevin.
Oh, no.
I despise these references to his clothing because Nobody seems to want to talk about that photograph of him standing there in a red Hollister T-shirt. Now, I can tell you, having teenagers, that the hottest clothing property in that set is Hollister clothing.
Yep.
There are individual stores. Shucks, we've even got one in West Virginia down in Charleston. And my kids are, hey, Dad, take us to the Hollister store. Sorry, can't afford it, baby. But, you know, that's upscale status wear.
Yep.
That's what all the hip kids are wearing now, he said, sounding like a total geezer. Nobody talks about that.
Yep.
It's all hoodie, 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 hoodie. He only... It was raining!
Yep.
Would he, you know, I'd like to know... I'd like to know from Jerry Rivera... I'd like to know if he thinks Trayvon Martin would be alive if he was just standing there in the rain soaking wet.
Yep. Well, when you read that comment a few minutes ago about the hoodie had as much to do with the killing as the gun did, at first I thought it's kind of, it is in some ways an observant comment because in the mind of Zimmerman, that was a, as it were, dog whistle to the fact that I got to follow this boy. And then, making the point about the gun, if Zimmerman hadn't had the gun, there would have been no killing. But, you know, I do agree that the comment by Rivera was a little bit crass in the sense that if you think a hoodie was the only thing that was responsible, you're really not thinking. Given particularly since you've heard the 911 tapes for Aldo, you know, this guy was out to kill him before, almost as soon as he saw the kid. And I'm hoping that with the FBI taking over the investigation, they'll eventually, today, tomorrow, next week, bring charges against him. Because, I think there's definitely civil rights violations. And if I were one of those homeowners in that HOA, I'd be sweating right about now because there's a good lawsuit against the Homeowners Association waiting, and every one of those homeowners is on the hook. So, but that's life in America and life down south.
And that's the hardest thing to say, Kevin.
Yep.
I mean, that's the equivalent of the line from the end of the Jack Nicholson movie. You know, forget it, Jake. It's Chinatown. You know, it's just America. You know, we're so in love with our firearms that we're willing to trade a mother's grief for some paranoid cracker's right to sit at home and feel like he's protecting liberty because he's got a house full of handguns.
Yep.
And granted, it flew under the radar, but I'm still bothered by this story not too far from me, where the 82-year-old guy blew away his 57-year-old sister-in-law, his 47-year-old wife, and their 83-year-old father.
Yep.
With a 5-shot, 38 caliber revolver. He wasn't drunk, he wasn't on drugs.
Has anything came out about it since you first brought it up?
That's it. I mean, there's not much to be said. You know, the headline was kind of squirrely. Police still searching for motive.
Yeah, you can't ask the guy. You can't, you know. I mean, that's what.
And the one neighbor or family member or whatever said, he never abused nobody. He didn't hit her. He didn't beat her. Or didn't scream at her. They were a happy couple. I think he might have been getting a little senile.
Yep. Well, that's another thing that's wrong, is journalism today throws the headline up there, puts a little blurb of a story, and that's it.
So what happens? So, what happens, Kevin, when these paranoid crackers get senile and they've got a house full of firearms?
Yep. And, yeah. You just have to wonder about the family You know, I've dealt with senility in my family before, and you want to take the guns away from Dad's room, you know, kind of thing. You don't want them near a gun.
Well, we dealt with it with my grandmother, and we had to hide her shoes.
Yep.
She was a lady of profound propriety and would not go outside without her shoes. So as long as she couldn't find her shoes, she couldn't go out and start wandering away.
Yep.
Now, I can only imagine what it's like when you have to hide Daddy's .357 Magnum.
Yep. But it has to be done at some point if you're responsible family member, whether the family member is senile or you got children in the home. You know, I know when I was a kid, my dad kept the gun way out of reach until I was old enough to understand that guns will hurt you, you know.
Yeah, I don't know why I still even have one, because I keep the ammunition so far separated from the handgun as to render them both useless.
Yep.
You know, pardon me, Mr. Home Invader, would you wait while I go to one end of the house and get the clip and go to the other end of the house and get the .45 so I can blow you away?
Well,
yeah, I think under those circumstances, I'm better off throwing the chef's knife.
Yep. And you probably might stand a better chance of survival anyway.
Oh, our buddy Ray answering my question, what happens when these paranoid, they become Civil War reenactors.
Yep.
That may be tonight's toaster.
Hey, I wanted to comment, too. Kathy, I heard her on the line the other day, and I just wanted to say, wish her the best, because it's always a treat, whether I hear her on your show or another show, that's a voice that you can't miss, and it's nice to see someone from the younger generation working all these things out in her head and doing it in a very intelligent way.
It's a beautiful thing, isn't it?
Yes, yes, because you don't, and it's probably because of Cassie's history, you don't see a lot of young people in Southern families working on things like Cassie is in terms of understanding the world she lives in and taking the time to call in the talk show and talk. That's what I want to see a whole lot more of.
But, you know, there is a substantially younger audience in the Horn. It's one of the things that I find inspiring. Because, you know, people like Limbaugh and Hannity and that crowd, their median demographic age is like 70-something.
Yep. Yep. And I gotta correct myself, because I'm part of a group, progressive group, that there's a lot of young, it's a mixture, but there's a lot of young people in that group, and they're leaders in it, and that's what we need. That's where Occupy is going. It's not our generation anymore that is going to make the change. It's going to be these kids that are early 20s, late teens that are going to make the change. It seems to be that way throughout history, too, when you think about it.
Yeah.
But, you know, this time,
what you have to guard against is the cynicism of the aging process.
Yep.
Because there are, you know, it's very easy to be an optimist and an idealist in one's youth and become a cranky, hardened, old, right-wing conservative in one's age. You know, Sailor Chick in the chat room just made an astute observation. She said if Christ walked through that homeowners association in his robe, George Zimmerman would blow his ass away, too.
Yeah.
And he had his hood up.
Well, if Christ were to speak in any mainline churches today, they would...
Jesus would not be welcome in the Roman Catholic Church. He would not be Roman. He would certainly not be welcome in the Baptist Church.
Oh, yeah. Yep. Well, the you that was telling the story about the English-speaking guy? I think it was you or Malay. This was the true story where... some guy was speaking to a crowd, and one of the people in the audience, a Baptist preacher, came up to comment. It was some kind of council meeting. And a Baptist preacher came up to comment and said, if Jesus spoke English, then it's good enough for me.
That's got to be Malloy.
Yeah. Well, I'm remembering a little bit of that. And yeah, it was Malloy, and it was at a council meeting in Texas to decide whether English and Spanish were going to be taught together or just English. And this guy was retelling the story to another group in the South, of course, in Texas, and they all just looked at him with eyes, you know, like, yeah, so. None of them understood that Christ never spoke English. And it's just, oh my gosh, come on, people. You know, if you're going to believe in a religion, try to figure out where that religion came from. You know, it didn't start in North America. It started way, way east of here. So, I don't know. I'm hopeful, and I'm both pessimistic and hopeful about the future at the same time. And I think that...
Well, you know, it's a little bit like Sandra. If you... I mean, not Sandra, Kate. You know, on the one hand, you look and you see that things are falling apart. It's like the poem that says, the center cannot hold.
Yep.
On the other hand, as I pointed out, as the empire implodes, you'd like to hang on to a little bit of the good stuff and let the bad stuff sink itself.
Yep.
And that, I guess, Kevin, is our challenge. It is awfully good to hear from you. You have a great weekend, all right?
You too, Bob, and I hope to catch you on Monday.
All right. I hope so. You take care.
Okay. Take care.
Bye now. Kevin calling from Colorado Springs, about 7.5 minutes before the hour. Email from Jude. I had this, you know, I stack up emails to try to get to as many of them on air as I possibly can. And I want to make sure that this gets out before the program ends. Jude heard an interview with Mayor Jeff Triplett of Sanford, Florida, who said, "I've stepped away from my daytime job in banking so we can focus on the Trayvon Martin case." Jude said it was un-effing believable that he would be so casual, so indifferent, so bankish in his thinking. It was an interview on Lawrence O'Donnell's program with Triplett. Jude is moved to real compassion in cases such as this. And she said, "There are letters, cards in all forms that have been and are being sent to Trayvon's mother, Sabrina Fulton, via her attorney, Benjamin Crump's law office in Tallahassee, Florida. To allow oneself to be locked in a space of feeling helpless only leads to frustration and apathy of personhood. We don't have the time for that." She said, "There's no way I could think of, other than lending the hand of compassion and deep sorrow from one mother to another in this time of profound brokenness of Sabrina's son Trayvon having been killed. The women that I've spoken with concerning this killing of this young fellow all have responded with such a sense of grace and urgency and openness." She said, "I have to be honest, Bob, it took me several days to gather my thoughts before putting them to paper for Sabrina and her attorney, Mr. Crump, also, as his process in this serious situation, I feel strongly, needs our support, too. There is contact information out there. It is fairly easily found if you want to reach out and simply express sympathy." Such a loss. Our buddy Bill in Cleveland noting that he heard if English was good enough for Jesus, it's good enough for me. He said, "I heard that gag going back into the 1950s. As to empire, Jim suggests, Kate, that you read the Meditations of Marcus Aurelius. I second that suggestion. You probably already have read it, though. Jim also suggesting that an original thought in Geraldo's head would die of loneliness.
Nope.
Yeah. Jeanette with a trenchant observation. She said, "It doesn't even have to be raining. What if people are just cold? It's a good enough reason to pull your hood up. Cold ears." Yeah, this is my editorial. Cold ears suck. And many thanks going out to our pal Cindy. She just sent along a contribution and said, a little road trip help as a thank you for telling the truth about the hateful little monster, Ron Paul. Thanks, Bob. Thank you, Cindy. It's all very much appreciated. I hope you know that. We had a good round of fundraising Monday and Tuesday and Wednesday and covered those days. We haven't had much in the way of fundraising yesterday or today. There won't be any Monday, there won't be any Tuesday, there won't be any Wednesday, there probably won't be any Thursday. Maybe we'll do that on Friday. But it all, and with the PayPal button down, it makes things doubly difficult. So I'll go ahead and mention again, if you wish to contribute, and we look to raise about $100 a night. If you wish to contribute, you can log into PayPal and just contribute directly to bobkincaid@gmail.com. That's the email address that's tied to the PayPal button at the headonradionetwork.com site. And click personal and gift, and there will be no transfer charges. So by all means, if you can, your help is much appreciated going into a considerable period away. I'm sorry we have to fundraise, but it is the price of broadcasting on this little tiny shoestring budget. It's the price of broadcasting in such a way as to not have us be muzzled or in any wise constrained by commercial concerns. So that's it. The next time you hear from me, it'll be noon Eastern Time on Capitol Hill. We'll be broadcasting live as the arguments go forward on the Affordable Care Act. I hope you will join us. We'll also have the Ustream channel up and running. Please do join us noon Eastern Time, 9 a.m. Pacific, or in the regular broadcast slot if you wish to listen in rerun. Thanks to everybody who makes all of this happen. You with your kind contributions, both financial and of your ideas, your very finite and limited time. It is preciously appreciated. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff, Lottie and Sparky in the chat room, our news ninjas Gene and Susan, our blogger Texas Betsy, my head writer David in Tennessee, John Fox and Ben Birch, who have worked so hard to get the website and up and keep it up against a nasty gang of hackers. Thank you. And thanks, of course, to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. Go there, sign up for the email newsletter or the hard copy newsletter. Maybe buy a Save the Endangered Hillbilly t-shirt, the coolest t-shirt in America. Maybe make a contribution. However you wish, but be part of this uprising against the horror that is the Appalachian apocalypse. Rick Smith is next. And always, 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 Gina, Judy, it's all for you.